Good morning, people. Welcome to the iWrite Radio podcast for Monday. I've got Jimmy Hutton with me. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Norrie.
And Stuart Lockhead. Hi, Stu. How's it going?
How are you doing, Norrie? I'm fine.
Today's going to end up being, apart from Nicola Sturgeon's press conference, which appears to be back to 5 days a week at 12:15, it's really going to be a newspaper report. We've had stuff from Ruth Wisher, Kenny McCaskill, although that was a blog piece for Wings. Mr. Bell has been answering George Keravan in the National, and lots more. So I think you'll really be getting a newspaper report today, guys. But we'll start with the press conference. Jimmy, did you catch it all?
I caught most of it, mate, yeah. It almost caught me unawares because I was still thinking Tuesday to Thursday, but there we go, I managed it. And I thought it was informative as usual. Figures are still looking not too bad, although the new cases are ticking up a wee bit, but then we did kind of expect that when indoor spaces in pubs and restaurants and that, it was always likely to be, and it's a pretty small uptick, even with the slight cluster that they appear to have found in Aberdeen. I thought the press were poor the day. I mean, 7 of the, whatever, 14 or 15 questions were desperately asking her if she was going to reintroduce some kind of restrictions on pubs because of what's going on in Aberdeen, and she kind of made it clear at the start that she didn't really plan that. And then you had the absolute horse's arse. I mean, horse's butt of the day award goes to Tom Peterkin from the Press and Journal, who effectively said, "Now, I know you've said you're not going to speculate, but will you speculate for me on information that you didn't really know about yet?" Which I thought was laughable, but there we go.
I've got a theory about the Aberdeen outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
It's all these northeastern Tories gone out to celebrate the new leader of the Scottish
I'm putting up a constitutional excuse for us not to discuss the Tories today.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the constitutional excuse?
Well, we do it every day.
Well, we've got to. They run the country, Stuart.
Aye. And let's be honest, I know you're saying it's a paper review, but I did note that on the radio this morning, Good Morning Scotland, that wonderful paragon of investigative journalism and unbiased fairness that rattles out the radio every day, Douglas Ross, again, absolutely unchallenged, got to assert that Nicola Sturgeon signed a document in 2012 that effectively rules out a second independence referendum, making it once in a generation. That's absolute nonsense, and he said it completely unchallenged because the BBC, they're not going to challenge the new rotten ref, the new leader of unionism in Scotland, are they?
Which brings us actually quite neatly. I think we'll just delve straight into the papers on this.
Well, can I speculate on what Jimmy just said about the BBC?
No.
When the day comes... when the day comes and there is an uprising because the people of Scotland get fed up with being a colony, the first place to go up in flames will be Pacific Quay.
I don't think we'd waste such a wonderful building, Stuart. I think we might just go in there and toss them all out and take over. As Granny Weatherwax used to always say in Terry Pratchett books, there will be a reckoning.
Yes. Okay. You're right there. It'd be better off to take it over. Okay, what can we burn down?
We can't burn anything down, Stuart. It's our country. Why do you burn your own country? God, you so much want a revolution, don't you?
I don't know, though, mate. I do like a snag cooked on a bonfire. Could we maybe do Tory Party HQ or something like that? Just get the baked tatties and the snags in there first.
If you want a bonfire, go to Northern Ireland. Oh, you're too late this year.
Tory Party HQ will do.
Even that, that's a lovely building.
I know,
it's not the building's fault it's full of knob ends.
Well, we'll no do the building. We'll just take all their files out the back. We'll keep all the secret ones, because obviously we want to peruse through the secret ones and find out all the stuff that they kept hidden under the carpet, Matt. But the rest of their membership list and stuff like that, we can just take it out the back green and have a bonfire.
And the best thing to do with it, because if we get our independence, the number of Tories that will claim they were for independence will be unbelievable.
Oh, God,
including Ruth Davidson and Douglas Ross.
I'd imagine that Ruth Davidson could be a candidate for the world backtracking record. She could overtake Usain Bolt gone backwards once independence happens, mate.
Does she not already hold that record? Stuart, sorry.
No, I've got nothing left to say. Not on this subject. I'm deep in trouble.
Okay, so the theory George Keravan, Peter Bell are both espousing today is that Ruth and Dougie are the dream team for putting the boot in on behalf of the union. Our thoughts on that, gents?
Ooh, can I start? Because it opens with a paragraph that I don't agree with. The Tories are rattled now.
Sorry, who is this?
Well, you said it was George Keravan.
Right, aye, but I mentioned Peter Bell as well.
So. Oh, that's true. No, George Keravan opens with a paragraph that even Peter Bell doesn't object to, but I do. The Tories are rattled, and how? They are rattled by COVID-19, Boris is flip-flop, da-da-da, they are rattled. Above all, the Tories are rattled by the growing cracks in the union. Now, I'm sorry, I've been reading other stuff over the weekend, and this is London-based stuff, and there a lot of people based in London, the commentariat there, are talking about rewinding to the fact that the people, that Dominic Cummings, Michael Gove, Boris Johnson, these the faces that we see in charge of the government, are backed by the Koch brothers. At the end of the day, the richest, one of the richest families in the world, who backed all far-right things in the world. And this is not a conspiracy theory, it is a fact. And an actual fact, the plan at the moment, no, the plan isn't chaos, but they're quite happy to have chaos to as a means to make more money.
Right, okay. That was pretty good, Stuart. That took you almost 5 minutes to get in with the Koch brothers.
No, he's right in one thing, mate, in that it is a worldwide movement, and they have spent considerable sums of money to get to the stage where, for example, you've got Robert Jenrick over the weekend telling us how they're going to much revamp planning in England and Wales so that things can be built quicker, and that's to be seen by us as a good thing. But the reality is that's one of the tenets of these right-wing groups, is that they want to cut back on regulation and planning regulation in particular, because planning regulations means it costs them money. Hence the reason Robert Jenrick took his 12 grand bung to save one of his pals 40 odd mil.
Right, okay. Sticking with Stuart's chaos theory, if what they want is chaos...
No, they don't want chaos, they want to make money, but on the way to achieve this money that they're expecting to make huge amounts of and control through it, they're quite happy to cause chaos.
Right. Okay, let's say I accept that, which I don't, but let's say I accept that. Why is Scottish independence not part of the plan for them?
Simply put, it's too expensive. As I say, it's not, as I've said previously, it's not necessarily the money that they take out of Scotland that they're worried about. It's the money that they would have to spend on for England keeping up with Scotland, because an independent Scotland would automatically maybe take an economic hit in the first, 3-4 years. I think there'd be stormy waters, but the fact that a relatively wealthy country of only 5.5 million people sitting, if you're sitting in Berwick, it's a donder across the border, mate. And over time, Scotland would have a considerably better standard of living and be run better than England is. I think we're already seeing that it's run better by what we've seen over the last
But these guys aren't long-termists.
Yeah, but look,
these guys are looking to disrupt the market so they can make money out of it.
The coaches are long-termists, mate. They've been doing this for the last 2 decades. Of course they're long-termists.
Okay.
They might have surrounded themselves by wee diddies that are only in it for 5 minutes to make a few quid, but they're not. Mm.
And I think I've become convinced that the only solution, fiscal solution for an independent Scotland is to have its own currency on day one. And because under those circumstances, the sterling will collapse by about 10% on day one, because Scotland and the oil reserves are really important. Now, I'll throw in a caveat on that. There was a report today reminding us that there, 1985, the Tories had a plan to snatch the oil fields from Scotland if Scotland went independent. So who knows?
Well, first off, I mean, this Scotland must have its own currency on day one. That currency would have to be pinned to something. You couldn't simply open the door and say, right, there's your Scottish pund.
I'll tell you what, I'd pin it to the euro a lot quicker than I'd pin it to the English pound.
That, to me, would be the obvious move. But this idea that it would be an independent currency from day one, I don't even think it's possible.
Well, the advantage of having an independent currency is you can print your own money.
I understand that.
In an economic crisis, that's the best tool you've got in the box.
I think one of the things that we could possibly do is during our negotiations with England as to how independence, say we get to the point where independence has happened, we've voted for it and it's happening. During our negotiations with England, don't you think it'd be a good idea to approach the European Union and the European Central Bank and say, listen, we're going to launch a currency, we'd like to pin it to the euro, and should we have any issues with our southern neighbour, either in any way undermining our currency or making it difficult for us to raise money on the world markets, how would you like to give us a guarantee of loaning us, say, €1 billion to be paid back over 4 years? Because at that point, the currency is rock solid and any footer in a boot down in London makes very little difference, because the European Central Bank is considerably larger than the Bank of England.
Well, I've got another reason. I think it would be a huge negotiating point. I don't think England or UK are going to like the idea that we open our doors as an independent country with our own currency, because as Stuart has already said, the pound will fall through the floor. Mm-hmm. So they're going to want us to stick with the pound, regardless of all the nonsense about it's our pound and you can't have it.
It's almost as bad as it's Scots, you know, kind of blood and soil Scots saying it's our pound and you can't stop us having it. It's just as bad.
Well, the fact of the matter is, if we want to use the pound, we can use the pound. It's a free trading currency. I mean, the blood and soil Scots are quite right. There's nothing Westminster can do about that.
Yeah, but it's just modern monetary theory is now focused entirely on look what's happening right now with the pandemic scandals. All over the world, people are printing money.
It's not having this massive inflationary effect that printing money had back in the '70s.
Mm-hmm. Because it was printing money back in the '70s.
In a way, back in the '20s with Germany. I mean, it's not.
Well, we need to stop talking about printing money and start talking about printing, pressing keyboards.
Aye, creating capital.
Because that's what it is. And I'm very glad you finally jumped on the modern monetary theory bandwagon with us two, Stuart. Mm.
Yeah. Well,
now, can we go back? I was just going to say, can we go back to this myriad of articles? I mean, the National itself had about 5 or 6 that were pretty entertaining this morning. Ruth Wishart had a couple of interesting things to say. Like you say, George Kerevan. My God, the fact that Kenny McCaskill's now a regular contributor to Wings is a strange one. We could get a half-hour discussion out of that on its own, given how popular Wings must be in, is it HQ still Charlotte Street?
It's 7 Jackson's Close, I think it is, or Wine.
Oh, right, aye, they'll have moved down nearer Holyrood, of course.
Aye, that's right, I've been there and I should know that. Yeah, I think Kenny's kind of putting himself up as an alternative to the, shall we say, accepted leadership.
Aye, I think it's interesting that he's embraced the Wings platform, which is, it's still very, very well visited, shall we say.
And today
he was talking about marches, which is, it obviously plays well to the masses, doesn't it?
Well, funnily enough, I mean, Wings has never been a great supporter of marches. And I was reading the article and I hadn't looked to see who the author was. So I thought it was Stu Campbell's work. Mm-hmm. And I was getting a bit confused because get out, door knocking, that used to be my position. My position is now that we should be marching to get a visible presence on the streets. So I went to the top of the article and, oh, it's Kenny McCaskill. Mm. But there does seem to be a move amongst a section of the SNP hierarchy, or well-kent faces, put it that way, that we need to get the independence banner unfurled and flying again, because the unionists are obviously stepping it up.
Well, look, I don't think it's up to the SNP hierarchy, certainly, to get all their ducks in a row, because there's only one left actually floating this week. I mean, everybody that's got any sensible article around is saying, look, I've summed it up. You've got a mutiny in the army, and people got to stop blaming the soldiers.
I don't think there's a mutiny, though, Stuart. I think, like a lot of people, you're reading too much into what appears on social media. I think it's an absolute certainty that should the SNP put anything relatively strong in their manifesto for next year about independence and getting us there within a year or two of that election, everybody steps back into line. It's just the fact that people have got nothing to talk about. They've got nothing to campaign about now. So there's an awful lot of navel gazing going on. And it doesn't help when you get particular characters on the NEC and whatever that are up to their lugs and machinations, shall we say. I think that was a disastrous move by the NEC last week. I think when the Tories were looking at what, since 2014, we've had 3 prime ministers, 2 general elections, a Brexit thing. The Tories were eating themselves. They'd had a leader that had just lasted 6 months, and then the NEC goes and shoots the SNP in the foot. I thought today was the day for Nicola Sturgeon, actually, to show real leadership and take control of what's going on. And I'm a bit disappointed that, I know it was a COVID press of the day, but I'm a bit disappointed that she didn't slap a few of them into place.
Look, can I just ask a simple question? Given that she is the First Minister, she doesn't, and she isn't actually the Chief Executive of the SNP, maybe it's time for Peter Morrell to step out of the shadows and show some leadership.
No, mate, because he never has in the past. Why have we ever needed a Chief Executive to do anything? The leader of the party has always been the focal point.
I still have a real problem understanding people that are crying out for a change to a strategy that's put independence on 54% and the SNP on 50%. I don't understand why people can't step back and go, oh my God, what a successful political party this is, for all their warts and scars.
I think it's mainly because we have a unionist media, and anything, I mean, as I say, I think the NEC decision was a disaster. But before that, any little thing that happens in the background of the SNP is made out to be a huge thing. How many civil wars have we had in the last 2 years whilst they've been growing in the polls?
Aye, in the last, year. Yeah, exactly. That's kind of my point. My point is that all the problems are not important enough to dent their position.
Yeah, but I'm going to take Peter Bell's position on this. It doesn't. You're assuming that we could end up with, let's say we have a 60%, 40% vote for a referendum for independence. They can still ignore us in London.
Yes. I'm sorry, Stuart, we're going to go back to this one. And until you can tell me the steps that you intend to take to circumvent Section 30, you're talking pish. It's pie in the sky.
As the weeks go by, I stick closer and closer to what Peter Bell is saying.
Peter's not telling us how to do it either.
Yes, he is. It's you focus, you make, look, instead of having to answer questions about what are you going to do
about that, Stuart?
Can I finish it? Can I finish what I'm saying? Instead of having to answer a question about what are you going to do on Independence Day about such and such, you ask the unionists to answer a question about what the situation is now.
They didn't have to. They're in power. The union is in place. The fact that Peter Bell wants to dissolve the union doesn't matter a monkey's to them because he's got no way to dissolve the union. He can campaign.
He's very blatantly open about it. He does it every day, every time he writes. He supports the SNP and he supports the SNP government going forward.
I'm coming around to Norrie's point of view of because David Cameron went to the EU and asked to renegotiate the terms and then had a referendum. I think we should do that. We should go to them and say, look, I mean, Stephen Daisley wrote a column at the weekend. I don't know if you saw it. It was hilarious about a new act of union. But his idea of a new act of union is that it is imposed upon us from London, as if that would ever be allowed to take place. But I agree. Renegotiate the act of union. Renegotiate the treaty because it doesn't work in the modern era for Scotland. And then when they turn around and say, no, we still need to be the dominant partner, we say that's not a union. We're having a referendum on it, whether you like it or not, and there is nothing you can do to stop that because we, as the representatives of the sovereign people of Scotland, the Holyrood Parliament, is taking that power to itself.
And the best thing about that approach is everybody understands it because the Tories have renegotiated every time they got in the government. And what are they going to do? Argue that it's something you're not allowed to do?
Well, it's pretty difficult when you've got every single one of them on record in the last 2 years saying that a nation cannot be held in a union if it feels that the union is against its wishes.
Over the last few days, I think it was you, Jimmy, that flagged up some blogs by a guy called Ian Lawson.
Mm-hmm. I've seen a couple of them and they've been quite interesting.
And I think was it him that reminded us that you've got that this is a situation. There's been a divide in the SNP for quite a long time, and the gradualists versus the fundamentalists.
Aye.
And the gradualists, we can easily see who they are. The fundamentalists, you could be right, Jimmy.
Well, I'll tell you what. The only thing he's missed, mate, is there's another category there, the absolute mentalists alongside the fundamentalists who just want to...
You mean the Sean Clark and...
Aye, the Bampots and that.
Don't associate that man with either the Yes Movement or the SNP, please.
He is an absolute clown, eh?
Stuart!
I remember going across to the Yes Bar in Glasgow. In the run-up to the referendum in 2014, and I came back and I said to you, Norrie, I think at the time, I says, I went across there, I thought I'd pop in and see what was going on in there. And generally speaking, certainly at the time, it was full of blood and soil nationalists. You know, most of them were wearing some tartan or some bonnet or something, and standing at the... If you stood outside on the street where the people had fags, you could really hear... These were the really dodgy end of Scottish nationalism. And they're there.
Stuart, can I ask you the question I always ask you when you bring up this, we should just ignore everything and do it.
Do what?
Why are you scared of calling it what it actually is that you're proposing? What's your fear of using UDI to explain it?
I don't I'm still not happy with UDI. To me, I come from a generation where it means something else, so I wouldn't use it.
Right. Okay. Well, explain to me, if it isn't UDI, what it is.
Well, I think Jimmy explained it a bit better just 2 minutes ago. You know, you negotiate.
Stuart, that is not what you proposed.
What did I propose?
My position on negotiating, renegotiating the treaty has not changed for about 2 years.
So your proposal is entirely based on a successful referendum?
No, my position is you renegotiate the treaty. You don't get a referendum until you have failed to renegotiate a new treaty.
Well, I'll go with you on that.
Oh, right.
I think you should have a referendum on the first negotiations that you have. But, you know, let's say you're negotiating your independence. Let's say it's a velvet divorce like Slovakia and Czechoslovakia and the Czech Republic. If people can be nice to each other, first of all, you enter a negotiation, and then at some point, quite early on, you say, right, we're going to put where we are to the people of Scotland to see whether that's what they want.
Right, but that isn't the position that Peter Bell holds.
I don't know exactly what his position is.
You just said you were getting nearer Peter's position.
Well, he certainly supports the SNP. He supports the SNP government. He supports the SNP becoming a majority party next May.
But
it's not.
Sorry, Stuart, you're avoiding the point here.
Oh, okay, but it's not enough.
Peter's position.
You've asked me a question. It's not enough just to get that kind of referendum. This isn't a referendum on a negotiation. This is just a referendum on some vague thing. I still don't like that. But look, I'm old enough to remember a referendum on the EU that we had in 1975 in this country. That was a referendum on.
Stuart, stop it. Stop it.
What's that? What?
Tell me what Peter's position is.
No, I said I'm getting closer to his position. I'm not.
Well, how do you know if you're getting closer if you don't know what his position is?
Okay. He just wrote an article today, which is not a critical article, but just a response to George Kerevan's article, which is actually longer than George Kerevan's article, and you expecting me to sum up both of them?
No. What I'm expecting you to do is tell me the position you're getting closer to.
Well, I've already explained that.
No, you haven't, because you haven't told me what Peter's position is.
At some point, the Scottish Parliament has to get some bloody balls
and do what?
Well,
what does it require these testicles?
Call the people out onto the streets, you know.
And that isn't going to be called UDI.
I have no idea what you call it. So, we all saw what modern UDI looks like because we watched it announced in the Catalan Parliament, did we not? Only a few years ago.
No. The Catalans declared independence, mate. I suppose you could wrap UDI around it if you wanted to, but they had a referendum that said they wanted to secede from the Spanish state and won the referendum. It was the Spanish state's reality. Yeah,
but it was only a legally binding referendum.
No, well, they couldn't have a legally binding referendum because which they knew fine and well.
Well, what's the situation?
It was legally binding in Catalonia. It wasn't legally binding in Spain.
Well, they knew that because the Spanish constitution expressly forbids secession.
So, well, let's kind of keep that in the back of your head, lads, and let's move on to how the union will fight Stuart's, definitely not UDI, my renegotiate the treaty.
I'm not sure renegotiate the treaty.
Well, you've changed your position twice so far in this conversation.
I think that's just your perception, young man.
Jimmy, your position is...
Yeah, I'm kind of coming around to yours about the renegotiation, just particularly because it's easily explained to the people that it's exactly what Cameron done with Europe.
I think it's the only way I can see round the Section 30 thing.
Yeah, it also gives, it still would have to be a big leap for the Scottish Parliament and for the leadership of the SNP. They would have to grow some testicles, as Stuart put it earlier, and actually turn round to the UK government and say, look, this doesn't work.
Well, it needs
this
to be,
cannot it, remain the constitutional position.
Well, Jimmy,
and frankly, you have
to... manifesto.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Some kind of commitment towards it. But what they have to do is insist that there is a constitution written for the United Kingdom, perhaps, and then tell them that we're not going to sign up to that constitution.
There's several, what I would call, barriers to agreement that should be placed there. I want independence. I don't want a new treaty. Therefore, I would like to see constitutional matters being moved to Holyrood.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing
which is a complete no-no. You know.
Aye, that's the one thing that Peter Bell's getting right, though. Does the Scottish Parliament has to assert that it is the seat of the sovereignty of the people of Scotland. You know how Parliament's sovereign in England?
Yeah.
And Daisley, in his article at the weekend, he just blatantly said that Parliament is sovereign in the United Kingdom. No, it ain't. And Stephen Daisley knows that fair well.
Having totally ignored the vote at Westminster, not Holyrood, the one at Westminster that underwrote the sovereignty of the Scottish people.
Aye.
Do you know that Scotland's not the only European country where the, for example, the king, there's no such thing as a king of Scotland, there's a king of the people, the king of the Scots. Yeah. And to some extent, that's the problem that England has, because they've never crossed that line. Whereas you take somewhere like Belgium, there was never a king of Belgium, there was only a king of the Belgians.
Yeah, so you rule with the authority of the people.
The authority of the people.
Right, we've kind of done this to death, guys. Let's let's talk about what the unionist plans are going to be, do we think?
Oh, they're going to be fun. We've got the dream team. Ruthie, Douglas Ross, who frankly I believe is basically doing whatever he's told. I don't think he has the intellectual capacity to lead any party. That's why they picked him, because he'll do exactly as he's told, and he's had that training down in London, so he's going to be an Alok Sharma or a Nadeem Zahawi. Doesn't matter what truth is presented to him or what evidence is presented to him, he will toe the line that he has been given, and he will constantly repeat that line. That's why they picked him.
One of the questions that was brought up by various people in the papers today was, if you're going to fight the Holyrood 2021 election on the SNP's track record in government, i.e. education, health, etc., why would you pick Ruth and Douglas Ross, both of whom are rabid unionists?
Yes, well, these are. I agree with you. It's up to Jim to say, well, look, why would they pick these people whose entire recent career has been built on simply pro the union?
Because they're going to double down. They're going to double down and tell us that we can't survive. They're going to double down and say to us that the fall in the PISA rankings is proof that we cannot educate our children, regardless of the fact that, I mean, this year's not going to help with the COVID thing, but regardless of the fact that 90-odd% of kids coming out of school are either going to college, university, or into a job, they're going to tell us that education's worse in Scotland than it was 10, 15 years ago. They're just going to constantly lie, and they're going to spend millions to do it because they've got the money to do that. And they will have the entirety of the press backing them up.
And not only that, but they won't just use millions and to do it. They've also hired this dodgy team, two New Zealanders. They've already started polling in Scotland to discover what dirty tricks they're going to use, what dirty messages they're going to use on social media to make fence and change their mind.
That's where they'll win it, Stuart. That's where they won Brexit. Because they managed to put out in the last few days millions of personalised advertising that doesn't have to conform to any electoral advertising law or advertising standards. If you get a message through your Facebook telling you Scots are too stupid, Nicola Sturgeon's a boot and she's filling her boots with money, they can do that because they don't have to conform to any electoral laws. No,
and that message disappears 10 minutes after the person's read it.
Well, I think they're going to find it's a different game if they play that way. If that's a tactic, because one thing about the Yes movement, it has a lot of savvy people.
Well, Norrie, that's the problem, internet. Though. We've said that in the past. They do not get Scotland. They don't understand it. And people who are at the absolute top, the likes of your Chloe Wesley running their internet advertising and stuff like that, the likes of Dominic Cummings, they don't know Scotland. So all their understanding comes from people like Douglas Ross, Ruth Davidson, Michael Gove. And we know how far off, I mean, their finger's nowhere near the pulse. They've got their finger up somebody's bum trying to find a pulse or something, mate, because they are so far off the mark, it's no real.
What they mean?
They believe their truth. They believe what they're saying. They're absolute fundamentalists. They actually believe that what they say and what they assert is the reality. And they have no understanding of the reality up here because they are still of the opinion, for example, that Ruth Davidson was successful. She was successful in taking them from 22% to 24% in the polls. That's no success when your opponents are hitting 46, 47.
But that's surely why what Stuart just said is important. If they're data gathering now, that'll be the reason for it. Because, I mean, it's as important to know that you're ignorant of something and get yourself educated as it is to be educated on something. And
you're
if
right,
they're putting the work in now to trawl the data they need, we better be pretty aware of it.
But I genuinely don't think it'll work for them because there's not a big enough constituency for them to win on. Their constituency has already fallen. You've got what? 30-odd% of rabid unionists that will vote for them. They need to find the middle ground, and it's no big enough for them, mate.
And don't forget, they're dying as well.
They had this information the last twice, Norrie, and failed with it.
But they're dying every day as well, that 30%, because this young people under sort of 35, 70% of them want independence.
Yeah, you're right on that. The number is
I need
falling.
To hurry up, guys.
Norrie, what was their... I can't remember. Who was the chairman of the Tory party that days all the polling?
Ashcroft. Right.
Ashcroft. They had this information over the last two elections for Lord Ashcroft. Look at the polling that he done for them, and they still didn't believe it, and they didn't operate on it.
Ashcroft's polling was painfully truthful, actually.
Accurate.
I remember a few of the things he did, because he didn't just do polling. He did, what do you call it, where you meet people? What's that called? Focus groups.
Focus groups in that, aye.
And kind of combined it all to come to a figure. And some of it was scarily accurate, as you say.
Mm-hmm. And that's what Cambridge Analytica came out of. It was taking a look at what Ashcroft was doing and going, you know what, we can do this even more accurately online. The problem is, I don't think there are enough. I genuinely don't think there are enough unionists for them to win. I think they're fighting the wrong... I'm glad for it. I'm delighted. I think they're fighting the wrong campaign.
Do we think that the British government will do anything about Facebook online electoral advertising?
No.
To benefit their position?
They don't need to.
I think they're very much a beneficiary of Facebook's very lax approach to cracking down on any skullduggery on their platform around politics.
So we've decided it suits them.
I think it kind of suits them, mate. It certainly suited them for the Brexit campaign, didn't it?
You didn't know the guy, but there was a friend of ours, Mr. Grant, who is unfortunately no longer with us, a rock solid independista, always thought that there should have been a fund put together to do the Cambridge Analytica thing for the independence movement. Do you think that would be an acceptable move for the Yes side?
I was kind of hoping that that's what Progress Scotland was about, mate. given how little polling they've actually produced, I was kind of hoping that's what they were doing, that they were looking into exactly how to use the internet to best advantage come the next campaign.
See, but that becomes a bit like having the confidence that, well, I'm not sure what's going on, but I'm sure they've got a secret plan to succeed.
No, that's...
Let me just finish, because it's not a long spoon, this. But back in 2012, 2011, we were told as activists that the SNP had a very state-of-the-art web-based data gathering system. Do you remember that?
Yeah, and they did.
Well, what, how much good did it do them?
But it was associated with a door knocking.
Well, sure, you see how much good did it do them, but other than losing the camp, the referendum in 2014, they've won every bloody election by a country mile.
What they had was an app that allowed you to input data in real time from information gathered on the door.
That's right, on the door, you're right.
I remember the creepy weirdo that was behind it all, but let's be honest, things have moved on a hell of a lot in the last few years.
Well, Jimmy, it was what everybody does. It was just, it was done more quickly because it was digital. And that then allowed you to go back to a door with an answer to a question that had been asked.
You're right.
So it was pretty sophisticated for the time, but it'll have been superseded by other systems.
Exactly. Compared to the dirty tricks that we've discovered that there was, you know,
well, it was
leave and the Trump organization have used.
It was nothing like that. It was traditional politicking and campaigning made easier and more effective by the digital platform.
Aye. As I say, mate, I was hoping that we might have got something more out of Angus Robertson's wee pet project, but it would appear not. We certainly didn't get you polling.
I think I can remember two pieces of information that came out of Progress Scotland. That's it. And again, Alex Grant's big bugbear was, where is your false news system? Where's your rebuttal system?
I'm sorry, mate. I'm pretty sure since certainly 2017 was the election that was a bit disastrous, but they lost a lot of seats, wasn't it, 2017?
Yeah.
And certainly since then, that's 3 years. So by next year's election, you'll be talking 4 years. People have been saying, look, this rebuttal system needs to be in place and people need certain bits of information so that when something's chucked in their face, like, because I say Douglas Ross this morning, I mean, all right, you're not going to get the BBC questioning on that. But if he says that on any TV programme where there is an SNP representative, immediately you fire back at him, you're lying. You're absolutely lying. Show me the piece of paper that she signed.
Jimmy, yeah. It's worse than that. When you think about it, in the last couple of years, if something is outrageously said, social media or on the news, who ends up rebutting it? It's Nicola Sturgeon herself that tweets about it. They don't seem to have a department to handle it.
Which actually is no bad thing, but they do need a setup. They need people trawling every newspaper article, every interview on the telly, picking this stuff up and basically just putting out a list. Today on BBC Breakfast Time, blah, 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 said, this is not true. Here's the link to the actual document.
Well, look. Talking up Scotland. It's a bit here and there at times, but he makes a big effort.
I'd agree. But he makes hell of a bad mistake, mate. When he makes a mistake, he makes a howler. His numbers are that far out as to be.
I would say he needs a much bigger team, but the idea.
He needs a team.
Aye, you're probably right. And we're all talking for the same hymn sheet here for a party that prides itself on its professionalism and its campaigning. It's a glaring error that needs to be sorted out post-haste.
On that, I think we've kind of done it to death today, boys, unless somebody's got something they absolutely need put out there. And Sunday is the answer. Jimmy?
Well, I was just going to say, exam results in Mora.
That I meant to mention that myself.
So here's hoping that everybody gets what they want, or, well, everybody's not going to get what they want, but a large percentage of people do. And here's hoping it doesn't turn into a sad bun fight where you've got, I mean, seriously, what are we expecting? 9:30 in the morning or something? Will that be the first Tory on there telling us that it's been cocked up by the Scottish Government and the SQA?
This will be the indicator of what Mr. Douglas Ross and Ms. Ruth Davidson intend to do. This will tell you the story of the 2021 election.
I think they'll be in with a packet of books.
If they've got any sense, they'll have worked out the percentage, so they can work backwards from the last recent decent percentage figure, whatever the Tories are going to grab, and make sure that the result this year is very close to it.
I'm going to hope that you don't think the Scottish Government has got anything to do with the exam results.
Aye, me, I know. It's the SQA, and given, I know one person that works there, so I can't talk about the whole organisation, but she's a bloody genius. So based principally on that, and given the fact that she's worked there an awful long time and has an awful high regard for her colleagues, I would venture to suggest that when Ruth and Dafty, the rotten ref, jump in with their tackety boots tomorrow, I would hope that the SQA are ready to slap them about like the huddies that they are.
I'll probably get my ear clipped from my big sister, because she used to work there as well.
I'm going to spend a little bit of time just trying to formulate the Herald headline. Egypt's past, geniuses fail. Something along those lines. Okay, guys. Thanks, Jimmy Hutton, for being on today. Thanks, Stuart Lockhead, for being on.
Bye-bye.
I'm Norrie Stewart. And thank you all for listening. And we'll catch up with you tomorrow, which is Tuesday, I think. Mm-hmm. If the papers are anything like today's papers, we'll have a lot to talk about.
Well, it's certainly no, the silly season. It's no silly season here in Scotland at the moment.
No, it isn't. No, it's all been quite serious stuff. Well, serious for those of us who are independents anyway. Cheers for now, folks. And as I said, thanks for listening.